if you want to be a guest, please email me. I have received so many emails of people that are excited and passionate about being a guest on this show. The process is time consuming. I go through about an hour long pre-interview and I determine where you'd fit best in the season. So if you've gone through the pre-interview process, or we've messaged back and forth via email and haven't gone through the pre-interview process, I'm not ignoring you. I promise. There's just a lot on my plate and I am one person. So that being said, I look forward to talking with every one of you that is interested in being on this podcast. Y'all are amazing and I honestly could not do this podcast without the support that I receive from each one of you. So thank you so much.
A virtuous woman, who can find one? Look at her there. She is valuable as money. She has a husband, but really her husband has her. She never talks back, bites back, fights back. She gives him all her days. Her hands never stop with the sewing and the cooking and the cleaning. She doesn't need sleep. She can sleep when she's dead. She has knotted arms from kneading bread. She works for little to no pay. Her change she gives on the streets, and anyway, she wouldn't know what to buy for herself. She wears thrift store dresses and baggy jeans and small business branded t-shirts and knee-length cargo shorts and button-down blouses and soft loose cardigans and never lets her bra strap show. See, she can stay awake on another pot of coffee. Worry, worry as winter comes, making sure all the kids have coats that fit. She can recite the scriptures like the ingredients for Ezekiel bread.
Welcome to the Focus on Your Own Family podcast. Fundamentalist evangelicalism impacted a generation. We survived physical, psychological, mental, and spiritual abuse. We survived the Focus on the Family movement, and we want to talk about it. Trigger warning, guests will be sharing stories of domestic violence, child abuse, and animal abuse. Please listen with caution. This is Kate. Here is her story. Hello, Kate. How are you? Welcome.
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
You are welcome. Everybody, I have Kate West, and Kate West has a book called Rift, a memoir of breaking away from Christian patriarchy, and it is dropping. I know publishers change dates all the time, so if you want to share when your book is dropping, I would love that.
Yeah, my book is coming out on April 30th.
How do you feel?
I feel so ready for it to be out in the world. I feel like I put a lot of time and energy into it, and having it done it's like a big relief. It feels really empowering, and I'm excited to see what it does for readers, and hopefully it can do its own work in the world.
How long have you been working on this project?
I think probably since 2016.
Okay.
So 8-ish years from the beginning to pub date.
Okay, so this baby is like ready for second grade.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal. I know we spent a little time chatting about it prior to pressing record. It highlights this particular sect inside of fundamentalism or fundamentalist evangelicalism. You and Tia Levings have coined the phrase of Christian patriarchy. And I believe that is an appropriate title to give it. As we know, when we leave this fundamentalist world, there's not a whole lot of language that surrounds these particular things because people have been so quiet about it. We've been so terrified to talk. We were conditioned, especially us women, we were conditioned to not ask questions, to not say anything, and to not divulge our family secrets. And family can mean nuclear, and then it can mean church. But we have to be good girls. We have to sit quietly, fold our hands, and smile, and be adored.
Mm-hmm.
So you coming out with this book, and then Tia about to launch hers, is going to, It's going to shed light into this world that so many are not familiar with. When I say James Dobson, the strong-willed child, Dare to Discipline, Focus on the Family, Adventures in Odyssey. Do you have memories of that as a child? Was that something that your family implemented?
Yeah, especially when I was much younger. So elementary age is when I think we had the most influence from Dobson. Those books, I'm pretty sure, were in our house. And I was raised with a very authoritarian parenting style that I can trace back to things that James Dobson has taught. At some point, my father moved away from Dobson because he has a psychology background and my dad doesn't think psychology is a legitimate science. So unfortunately, James Dobson wasn't extreme enough for my family. So we had to move on to something even more authoritarian and less psychology based. Not saying that Dobson is psychology based, but that's what he says.
He does have a doctorate in psychology, although we all beg to differ. His psychology feels like it's more pseudo-psychology rather than actual data. And I don't know, decent. Upholding human rights. I really could go on, Kate. We could spend the whole thing about how my disdain.
And when I got a little bit older, we moved to Colorado right near Focus on the Family's headquarters. So I knew people. I had a friend whose father worked there, and we listened to the Odyssey tapes occasionally. And we got to visit. At least back in the day, they had a whole Wits Corner. They had a whole setup for like a playground themed around Adventures in Odyssey that we could play at. So that was also part of my childhood.
Yeah, I did not. I mean, like Adventures in Odyssey would be on the radio and we would be lucky if we caught it, but it wasn't a huge part of my childhood in that way. More the influences that I had from James Dobson were the strong-willed child and the books that I'd have in my home. My sister had Brio. I think my brother had maybe a couple issues of Breakaway.
The more I learn about him, the crazier it gets with all his background.
I grew up with being called the strong-willed child. And it wasn't until, late into probably early to mid 30s that I started doing some research on how I was raised and realized that it was all Dobson. I just saw, all right, this dude's voice from the radio. That's really all he was to me. Problematic, of course, right? The different stories that he would have. And I can still remember the intro music for his radio broadcast. But for me, Focus on the Family growing up meant Adventures in Odyssey, meant these magazines. And I just really didn't put it all together until I was much older.
He leaned into the authoritarianism, but found leaders and teachers who were more focused on Old Testament teaching. And who said that psychology didn't matter as long as we followed the literal Bible. So after the Dobson influence, it was more like Vision Forum, which was impacted by Bill Gothard, I believe. So, this influence trickles down. Also, teachers like Doug Wilson, who's still teaching biblical patriarchy.
If you don't mind, will you, in your own words, define biblical patriarchy and really walk me through what that looked like for your family? Because it followed, when I was reading your book, it seemed like There was fundamentalism in the early years and then deep fundamentalism. And what I have said before is Dobson, there was Dobson and there was Gothard. Gothard appealed to a lot of narcissistic fathers with the authoritarianism and patriarchy. Dobson was softer and appealed to the mothers, especially covert narcissistic mothers. Now, that's not 100% true because it was sometimes you had authoritative fathers and narcissistic fathers in Dobson and then the inverse in Gothard. But in my experience, I have found that Gothard was dad's and Dobson was mom's.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense because I remember hearing that Dobson was not masculine enough as a leader. And so my father was more drawn to, you know, more what I would call toxic masculinity or like this macho presentation of masculinity.
So like alpha male?
Yeah, exactly.
So if you don't mind defining in your own words, Christian patriarchy. And like I said, if you don't mind like walking me through that slope, I would love that.
Sure. I'll start with the belief system, like what's the ideology behind it? And at the core is this idea that God is masculine and that therefore men are the best representatives of God. And so men should lead all realms of society. So church, family, government, and women were created second after men. And so they were created to be helpers. So that's their whole identity, is to help men. So if you're a wife, that means you submit to your husband. If you're a daughter like me, it means you're told as a child, your purpose in life is to grow up, get married, and have as many children as God gives you. So that's where it ties in with the Quiverful ideology. So people who know the Duggars, this is all connected. And I think that it spread in the 90s through homeschooling specifically, and also through classical school, the Christian classical school system, which Doug Wilson had a part of. So these isolated educational systems spread this belief. And I see it as a grassroots type of movement because it's not constricted to one denomination or one kind of church. I was Presbyterian, and people are very shocked when they hear that because they assume you'd have to be like Independent Fundamental Baptist or something like that. But I've seen people in this movement in all kinds of denominations. And for my family, we started out at what I would consider a pretty common conservative Presbyterian church. But over time, I could see, looking back now, I can see how we became more radicalized as my father got drawn more and more into these beliefs. And he got drawn, I think, because of his personality type. You know, like you said, I think he's drawn to authoritarianism. He needs control. And so this whole movement validates that desire and tells him that's godly, right? So that controlling your family is the right thing to do. So I can remember as a child, we would get Doug Wilson's materials. We would get Patriarch Magazine, which literally just teaches men how to be patriarchs. And then Vision Forum started in the 90s, and that really helped push this idea of gender roles and how children are supposed to follow their parents' vision for the future, which was strict gender roles, meaning that women could only be in the home. So I can see a progression now. And sometimes when I talk to people, they think this is in the past, but it's still happening. They just don't use terms that might be recognizable. So I haven't heard these leaders use biblical patriarchy in a long time, that's what they would have used when I was a kid. They might just say we're biblical, right? And so it's a little more under the radar, I think. But you can see people like Doug Wilson, whose church in Moscow, Idaho, is spreading these ideas that the church and home and even the government in his town should be run by Christians and Christian men. So it is far reaching, and it's just really insidious from my perspective.
There have been quite a number of people that have DM'd me over social media asking me to take a look into Doug Wilson's church. From what it looks like, he, for better lack of terms, significantly bullies people that call him out, particularly women. But I have read a few things where somebody mentioned something of him on social media, and he does not tolerate dissension in any capacity. So what was it like for you watching this? Because I think something that is important to highlight is that children that grew up in fundamentalist families, we have this ability to become chameleons because we're forced to be okay. Sorry, we're forced to be okay with all the random nonsensical decisions that are made by our parents, because it's like the trump card of God says so. If God's leading you to do this, then I have to be okay, because if I'm not, I am walking in disobedience and right. I have a rebellious spirit, and I don't want that because that leads to pain, physical pain because of punishment. So what was it like for you to have to just absorb this new lifestyle of, at one point, Dobson and Focus on the Family and Adventures in Odyssey is okay, and then you wake up the next morning and all of a sudden it's satanic because of psychology? What was that like for you?
I mean, it's chaos. That was my whole childhood, was unpredictability. You never know what's going to be okay and what's not going to be okay. One year we could have an angel on the tree, the next year we had to throw the angel out because it was an unholy image or something. So these rules are always changing. But the through line was that Dad is the one who makes the rules, and he gets to do that because God gave him that ability. So, I mean, it's difficult when you grow up that way because you don't have anything to compare it to. I didn't have the mental capacity or the vocabulary to describe how unsafe that felt, but my body felt unsafe and I felt insecure as a child. And I think that helped me develop anxiety later on. But I didn't understand that's what was going on. I just thought it was me. It was my fault that I wasn't fitting in right. Or when I broke the rules, it meant I must be really evil. So it puts you in this bad situation, and then it blames you for any pain you might feel.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Thank you to those that have reached out with your support. Whether you have left a review, if you haven't left a review, this would be a really, really good time to leave a review. Read every single one of them. So thank you. And for those that are subscribers to my Patreon, thank you. It means so much. One of the new features that I am adding for my paid Patreon subscribers is the chat feature. And this is just a way that we can all continue this conversation that we're having in the podcast. And if you are not a paid subscriber, unfortunately, the chat feature won't be available to you, but you can be a free subscriber and you'll just get the weekly newsletters. Y'all are amazing. And I honestly could not do this podcast without the support that I receive from each one of you. So thank you so much. I know it's tough to acknowledge that we had any sort of a childhood, because childhood for us was not what childhood was for our neighbors. At what age do you feel like there was a distinct cutoff of this was childhood and now I'm into womanhood?
That's really tricky for me. I was literally told I would be a child until I got married. Didn't matter how old I was. So I didn't understand when I turned 18 that I was an adult. So mentally, that's a hard line for me to find. But I also had to grow up really fast, you know, so it's just like you're trained to behave like an adult. You're told you're a child. It's very confusing. But I think for me, around age 11 is when I stopped playing. I stopped being a kid, because a lot of things were happening in my life, including 9/11. And I had all this anxiety about the end of the world and punishment. And then my family got evacuated for a forest fire. So all these traumatic things were happening around the same time that forced me to really grow up fast and start. I became obsessive about eternity and faith and God. And I stopped feeling like a child.
I recall reading that situation with the forest fire, and something stuck out to me that was prevalent for me. It was a consistent undercurrent for me growing up. And that is the detachment to animals.
Yeah.
Animals were disposable. That was so common in my house that I had people look at me sideways when, I had no sadness or sorrow associated with the loss of animals because it wasn't allowed. Yeah. They're not humans. They don't have a soul. When they die, they die.
Yeah. In order to be controlled, right?
Yes. I remember watching other people in my life, the adults in my life, make fun of people who were attached to animals.
Ooh. I
did not want to be that. I didn't want to be shamed for liking animals. So I made a conscious effort to not attach myself to anything that wasn't godly. And we were told that God says that we master the beasts and they are to be, like you said, they're to be controlled.
Yeah.
I thought it was abnormal to have your dog jump on your bed to cuddle with your dog. That was not normal in my house. We had cats as well, but even those were disposable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can relate. I can relate a lot.
Do you mind expanding on that?
Yeah, my mom is a huge animal lover. So I had that one side in my parents. And then my father is the authoritarian. So when I was little, we had a cat, and he just kind of tormented the cat. He would always try to scare him or run after him or like just make him afraid. And it's kind of funny to me now because the cat always targeted him when he would like throw up or have a hairball. So like he would always find my dad's shoe. Somehow he knew that was his torturer. But what you're referring to in the forest fire was we had two dogs that lived outside because they're outside dogs in Colorado, like huskies, part wolf. They did not want to be inside. So I don't consider that abusive, but my father would use like a newspaper on them, and he thought he was the alpha and he had to teach them how to be obedient to him. And when we had the fire, my dad said we couldn't take them with us. So we let them loose and we didn't see them for a couple weeks and just hoped that they survived the forest fire. And I remember just taking that, like you said, just like detached, like this is what has to happen. Dad said this, they're just animals. And looking back now, I have a lot of grief about that and sadness, because that's awful to do to your pets, you know, to just abandon them. And as a kid witnessing that, but they eventually got into some porcupines and they were caught by the Humane Society and we got them back. But one of them we had to put down because she got so sick from drinking creek water. So, I mean, it did have like real consequences that we abandoned them and they got sick. So, yeah, I have a lot of grief about that now of seeing how my father treated us and how he treated animals. It's very similar.
I was just reading Dare to Discipline and also The Strong-Willed Child. And there's a part in it where Dobson talks about his experience with his dog and how his dog was, I'm going to paraphrase his quote, but basically running the show in his home and challenging his authority. And so he starts beating the dog and eventually the dog cowers in submission every single time he sees him. And at that moment, he thought, huh, if a dog does this, I bet children would do this too. And it was at that moment that he started to use physical discipline, corporal punishment mm-hmm. on his children. And yeah. he saw an immediate change in their behavior.
Yeah.
And this is so real for people that grew up like we did. And I was having this conversation with somebody yesterday and how spanking was universally accepted mm-hmm. in society, whether religious or secular. There was a difference, though. Fundamentalist parents crossed the line because it wasn't, regardless, spanking is bad. Fundamentalist parents added this sadism to it. Mm-hmm. It was psychological. It was sadistic. And it was meant to tear you down so they could make you into the person they wanted you to be. And the concept of breaking your will, I feel like it doesn't go far enough. They shattered your spirit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Until you lost your voice completely. I'm curious about something. Did you have this phrase or these phrases in your upbringing? Kings, you can marry a king, you can marry a prophet, or you can marry a priest. Is that familiar language?
The language is familiar, but in patriarchy, we were taught that a man is all three of those things. So like he's the king of his house. He's the priest, like he intercedes between you and Jesus, which is wild. And then prophet, which I imagine, I can't remember exactly the application, but I think it was about like teaching the Bible to us. So a father was all of them.
I was watching a YouTube video with Debbie Pearl. Yeah, we can just take a moment. And,
yeah.
Yeah. With Debbie Pearl, and she was talking with a girl, and this girl was probably between the age of 17 and 19. I just don't see her being older than that. Possibly she was. This girl worked for them and she was asking her questions like, you're being trained to be a helpmeet. What are you looking for in a husband? And you could tell there was something in this girl. There was a spark of this spirit where she really didn't want this. Those that have escaped this world, we see it when we see it.
Mm-hmm.
And she just talked about how she felt it was unfair that she would make lunch for all of these men and then they would tell her to go remake something that they wanted because her whole existence was to serve them. And Debbie was like, well, that's because they're kings. There's kings and there's prophets and there's priests. And you definitely would rather marry a king. Those are the best ones to marry. And talking about how her husband, Michael, would, like, if he couldn't find something, he would open every drawer and upend it and create this mass tantrum of a mess. And she just sort of was like, yep, and that's just how men are. That's how kings are. And yeah. How accepting she was, and she was trying to force this person into accepting, not just accepting, but coveting that idea of a partner, of a spouse. It's beyond me.
Yeah.
Is that similar to your experience?
Yeah, because you're normalizing abuse as normal behavior. Or like you said, sadistically, it's called love. Like, my dad has a temper, but he's very charismatic. So like in public, he would be the life of the party, but at home, you can never tell if he was going to get upset about something and have a temper. And with like spanking, I think about that with Dobson, like he does have that psychology background, but he's using it to harm people instead of help people, you know, because he's like, it does feel so manipulative. And for me, I remember being spanked and being told, this is what love is. I love you. And then being hit, you know? And so you conflate these ideas. You're not a developed adult, obviously. So your brain isn't even developed all the way. And you're being abused. At the same time, you're being told that that's what love looks like. It's just so destructive. I lost all sense of self, you know, and I was told self-esteem is bad. You should be mad. You should hate yourself. And so it took me years to get out of that mindset. And even now there's like this deep feeling that I still haven't been able to get out, that something's wrong with me. I think it's just that psychology, like it gets into your child, you know, if as a child, it gets into your head and it's hard to deconstruct that.
We are taught from a very young age that we have to die to ourselves,
right,
to be resurrected with Christ. When I escaped, I remember it was probably within a year and a half. And I remember having this moment where I thought, I want to unbaptize myself.
Wow.
I want myself back.
Yeah.
Because if there is a God, that God would not have created me just so I could throw myself away and become something, become the image that they wanted me to be. And I remember just actively in that moment unbaptizing myself and saying, I am going to make it my goal to reconnect with that fiery person that I was destined to be.
Yeah.
And not to be ashamed of who she is.
That's beautiful.
But it takes a lot. And I know how that feels, looking in the mirror and you feel shame because you're taking pride in the appearance that you have, the reflection that you have. And it takes a long time to tell yourself that's okay. In fact, I made it a point that my daughter, she loves mirrors. She would love it if her whole room was made of mirrors. And when we are in a public bathroom and there's a mirror, her and I will stop before we leave and we'll do a dance. Because I never want her to hate the reflection that she sees. Because the world is going to tell her that it's not good, that she's not good, that she's not worthy. And I know that. And I can't protect her from that, but I can protect her from being told that inside our house.
Yeah. Wow.
And I can protect her from sending her to places that tell her that if she looks in a mirror and appreciates what she sees, then she is unholy and unworthy of receiving love. I can protect her from that. It takes a lot to unbaptize ourselves. I hope that myself and you and the other people that are coming forward, I hope that throughout time we can essentially unbaptize ourselves.
Yeah. I love that word. And it's similar to like breaking the cycles, you know, like generational cycles of trauma and abuse, and we got to put an end to it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's imperative that we reconnect with who we were, even though, let's be honest, Kate, who were we?
Yeah.
We never had an opportunity to get to know who we were.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the fact that you escaped, there's a line in your book that you say many of us were stay-at-home daughters. I'm going to botch it. Many of us were stay-at-home daughters, and some of us were lucky enough to escape, or some of us escaped. That line resonates with me so much.
Yeah.
I would love for you to read, before we get into courtship, if you wouldn't mind, first off, telling our listeners what you will be reading and like the basis of that, then we'll move right into courtship. It's beautiful. It stopped me in my tracks.
Oh, thank you. I'm reading a chapter called Virtue, and it's, for me, it's a retelling of Proverbs 31, because we were always told that Proverbs 31 is the standard for a godly woman, and it always felt impossible to achieve this ideal that men were telling me I needed to become. And at the same time, I was witnessing mothers and daughters who were told, you know, who were made to be parents to their younger children. And so women in general, just being repressed and being exhausted and being lied to that this was a blessing when really they were just being discarded and dehumanized. So I wrote this as a retelling of that. And it comes right after a chapter where I only quote patriarchal teachers. And so this is me talking back to them. A virtuous woman, who can find one? Look at her there. She is valuable as money. She has a husband, but really her husband has her. She never talks back, bites back, fights back. She gives him all her days. Her hands never stop with the sewing and the cooking and the cleaning. She doesn't need sleep. She can sleep when she's dead. She has knotted arms from kneading bread. She works for little to no pay. Her change she gives on the streets, and anyway, she wouldn't know what to buy for herself. She wears thrift store dresses and baggy jeans and small business branded t-shirts and knee-length cargo shorts and button-down blouses and soft loose cardigans and never lets her bra strap show. See, she can stay awake on another pot of coffee. Worry, worry as winter comes, making sure all the kids have coats that fit. She can recite the scriptures like the ingredients for Ezekiel bread. Morning, noon, and night, she is with the children, saying the catechism, repeating the questions and answers prepared by the ancestors, running it deep in their neural pathways, singing the words if it helps. But time is always getting away, and she doesn't have time to eat. What with the children hungry, and the husband hungry, and the animals hungry, and the garden hungry, and God hungry, always hungry for her every thought and prayer. And her husband sits over there in the gate with the guys, calling to the other women passing by, laughing it up with the boys, getting home late, telling her she's the prettiest, though, in case she was worried. She doesn't have to worry, he says. And her children call her blessed for a short while. But then they run away or move out or marry young. And she ages like berries, growing green, ripening, and falling to the ground. And her beauty turns gray and her fruit disappears as she has fewer coats to mend and fewer mouths to fill and barely any dirt on the floors. And she is left with all the thoughts and dreams and desires and fantasies and false hopes that she started with and never could say. I told you to look at her, but really, you're not supposed to. She is made to quietly serve, sacrifice, submit, stay home.
Amazing.
Thank you.
if you wouldn't mind defining courtship inside of Christian patriarchy.
Sure. Courtship is an alternative to finding a marriage. I was not allowed to date. So people who are familiar with I Kiss Dating Goodbye was the same concept that was generally propagated in purity culture. So anything physical before marriage was off limits. But we took it to an extra level of emotional purity. So any feelings of affection for someone else were off limits until you were betrothed, which is basically being engaged. So courtship looked a lot different depending on who your father was. Again, because fathers are kind of like the mini cult leaders of their family. And so my family, we followed this courtship guide called The Pathway to Christian Marriage. And it's still available. You can still find it on the internet. It teaches that fathers need to guide the entire process, and parents need to approve on both sides of the relationship if possible, unless one of them isn't a Christian and then their opinion doesn't really matter. But for me, I went through like I call say 1.5 courtships. The first courtship, the way it looked was this man in my church approached my father, asked him if he could have a courtship with me. My dad said yes, then I was allowed to agree. And then we had a long courtship where every week we met with my father, who asked us questions. And
you were allowed to? Yeah. What if you disagreed?
Well, they probably wouldn't force me to have the courtship. But again, you have limited choices, you know? Okay. So it's not like there's a lot of pressure in this world to get married. So if someone's interested in you and you said no, that could be a problem.
Right. It's security.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen Fiddler on the Roof?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. That's what it feels like at times. Like, this is your security.
Mm-hmm.
And the shame, oh, the unrelenting shame that is placed on a woman, whether in fundamentalism or mainstream evangelicalism. If you are not married, you have less opportunities inside of the insular religious environment that you're a part of.
Yeah.
So anyway, I interrupted. I needed to know,
yeah.
Are you allowed to turn that down? The answer really is no. Because you will lack security and you will look like you're being prideful.
Mm-hmm. And opinionated, right? So,
right.
Like theoretically, I could say no. But I don't know what that would have been like because I said yes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so my father would have a meeting with the two of us once a week, and we would go through these questions that were in the courtship guide. And they were kind of all over the place. Everything from, do you like to have pets? To, would you homeschool your children? To very doctrinal types of questions. And anytime we were together outside of those meetings, we had to have a chaperone, which was usually my younger brother. And you can never be alone together or talk about anything that would, it was called like instigate feelings. So you had to be very detached. And for me, I was already dissociating all the time. So that was, you know, something I was practiced in. And it's just not a very good way to get to know somebody, but that is not the point. The point is you find someone who follows all the doctrine and all the your father's check boxes, and then you get married and then you obey that man for the rest of your life. So it's not a healthy way, in my opinion, to have a relationship. I think that's an understatement. But for so many girls, that's the only way to get out from their father's house, right? So you're hoping, if your father's authoritarian, you're hoping that then your husband would be kinder, right? Because you don't really have a lot of options in this world.
What role does the father play long term in the marriage? Is he still, in some IBLP families with the umbrella, the dad still dictates the marriage. He is still very much the patriarchy, even though you have created your own home. He still dictates a lot if he,
I think that could also, I think that also depends on the family. In my family, my dad had this opinion that once you get married, you're not part of your father's house anymore. So you did have that cutting off in a sense of his oversight. But there were scenarios that were very like laid out very literally from verses they found in the Old Testament of, for instance, if your husband died, and then if you were of a certain age, you would move back with your father, right? So you couldn't just be an independent woman if you were young enough. So it was just kind of like cherry-picked verses and distorted perceptions. It was just all about keeping men in charge.
Yeah, this idea that independence for a woman is so threatening that even if a husband passes away, you're required to move back in. For some people, that's what a soft landing for some people, right? But that is not how it is. I can recall times where my parents have said, if something, God forbid, something happened, you're welcome to move. Like, we will make sure we make room in our house. And I'm like, absolutely not. Like, that would not, that would not go over well.
It's not like you're staying and like being comforted. It's like you're going back to be controlled by somebody else.
Right. You're going back to a bad work environment.
Yeah.
Or, like
unpaid labor.
Exactly. I was just about to say forced labor environment. Many of us, our homes were prisons. And to go back into that space, especially if you had married somebody who was nice or kind, to go back into that. Also having the understanding that many fathers saw us as a way, like we were property, we were cattle, we were traded. It was an exchange of goods.
Exactly.
We were the shiny trophy. We, not even a trophy. A trophy is a prize that people take pride in. Dads didn't take pride. Dads owned you, but it wasn't like a pride in ownership, no matter what, owning something, like that's bad. But do you see where I'm going with this? Like, I'm lacking the words to articulate this the way that it needs to be, but it's like, we were second class. And we were just something that they had to do. We were a burden. Having, there it is. Like inside of the evangelical community, if you were a woman that gave birth to sons, that was a blessing crowned with glory, right? My husband and I have three kids. The first two are boys and the last is a daughter. And I remember how celebratory everybody's moods were when they found out I was carrying future men of God, future kings, future rulers, men that were going to change the trajectory of the world for Jesus and fight and bring back this nation to its original state. It was just incredible, right?
Just how
discarded girls were. I should be fair. That is not how my mom saw it. And that is not how my dad saw it. They were just elated to, you know, like, what, you're pregnant? That's amazing. you know, but
yeah,
there were so many people in my life that were consumed with this idea, like, oh, you are carrying the future sons. It's like,
that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, I'm like, not pregnant with Jesus. Jeez. A lot. That's intense. But that's what
That's
what it's like.
Yeah. And it's like, especially if they believe what my family believed is you have more of a connection with God if you're male, right? And women are more deceived and emotional and not rational. And so men are more godly just by being male.
Oh gosh, there are so many patriarchal things and phrases that I used to say. Every time.
That's the thing. It's like, I grew up very extreme, but like these ideas are all over the place. They might not be as extreme as my family, but they still exist in a lot of families.
Yeah. You enter into a courtship with one person and your father says the courtship is over because you have confessed that you have feelings for this person.
Well, that wasn't the reason. The reason was this man wasn't, he kind of like had trouble keeping a job. And there's some like issues like that where my dad was like, I just don't think he's the right one for you. And it felt really arbitrary. So that's why he said he ended it. I don't know for sure.
Yeah. It could just be a control thing. Who knows? Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to paint your dad. That came out.
He was.
Yeah. You're like, no. He
it's
was.
True.
You met someone and I love how you write him in your book. You talk about how you had feelings, but you couldn't show that. There was something so specific. And this actually is really a pivotal point, I think, in the book where you say, I just want to ask him out. And I love that because that's where your spirit is starting to come back, right? That's that spark. And what a pivotal moment for you. Can we talk about that moment? Because I think like that, it's not written in giant bold letters. It's not underlined. It's not, you know what I mean? Like it's not in italics, but like that's a really big, big moment. Can you talk to me about that?
Yeah. And it's because of the first courtship I had and the way it ended and my father ended it. And I had feelings for this person. And my dad told me, you need to repent of those feelings. And that was my first real spark of saying, I don't know how to say sorry for my emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And then thinking, this can't be true. Like this has to be a lie. I just know in my somewhere deep down inside that it's okay to love somebody. Mm-hmm. And I knew at that moment, I did not have the strength to go against my dad. But I told myself, if I ever have these feelings again, I am never going to let him keep me from being happy ever again. And so it was a few years before that I actually did ask this person out. He's my husband now. But at the moment, I was just like, he's my best friend. And I really like being with him. And I just wanted some sense of choice, you know, that I get to pick the person I have a relationship with, that I get to be the one who asks him out and not just wait for somebody to pick me. Because my whole life, it was like, you just sit here and you clean the dishes and you wait for somebody who notices you and wants to marry you. And I was really tired of that. I was like, I'm tired of waiting for my life to start. And so I was determined not to let that happen anymore. But it was a slow burn, right? Because it took me a few years to actually do that. But we did have like a secret first date, going out to lunch as friends.
It already, growing up, conditioned the way that we were with purity culture and gender roles. It is terrifying to think about dating or think about marriage and just our lack of understanding of human sexuality. It's terrifying. I remember thinking, if I allow myself to have feelings for somebody, it's going to immediately lead to sex because that is what we are told. And this, first off, lack of understanding of what that even meant.
Right. Yeah.
And then on top of that, being told your whole life that you're a woman, so you cannot, you tempt people and you cannot resist temptation. So I walk around thinking that I am the worst because everybody that sees me is tempted by me.
Mm-hmm.
It's undoing that nonsense is so challenging because I don't know if I'm out in public and a a male looks my way, I've been conditioned to believe it is my fault that he's checking me out. First off, dude might not be checking me out. So right. Now I come across as vain when it's just like, that's how I was brought up. I was brought up to believe that I was so over-sexualized.
Yeah.
That I believe that everybody is looking at me that way, that I am being consumed for sexual thoughts.
Just because of the way your body looks, right?
Exactly.
I remember wearing a bikini for the first time like 2 years ago, and I was like, I was really scared, you know, because it just like, it's ingrained in you. But then like the world didn't end. Nobody was like yelling at me. And I had a fun time, you know, so it's like, it was fine. Nobody died.
So you marry David. How old were you when you married David?
25.
How long have you been married?
11 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Walk me through leaving. Not David, but like, so you've been married for 11 years. That's so great. Walk me through leaving. Because you escaped. That's important language, by the way.
Yeah.
We don't just leave. I use it interchangeably a lot because trying to explain to people escaping, they think that you like fled in the middle of the night. It's escaping. It's a mindset. You're held in this prison and you just do not think that you can leave because you are told your whole life that the world is bad and that people want to seek, kill, and destroy you. That is where Satan roams.
Mm-hmm.
And you will bring immense torment and shame, not just on yourself, but on your whole family. And you'll ruin your family legacy if you have the audacity to leave. You had the audacity to escape. I'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it's first a psychological escape. It's first realizing that you're in a bad situation and that you need to leave. That's like the first hurdle, is letting yourself go there. Because for so long, I just would say, as long as I obey my dad, God will bless me. As long as I do this, it will be okay. And then with the first courtship, I'm starting to like spiral out, like, this is not working. Like, whatever this process is, I feel awful. And if there's a God, why would God want me to be miserable? Which is a dangerous thought, you know, in this world of you don't matter. And so it was a long process of me getting courage to leave. And it got to a point where I was suicidal because I didn't know what else to do. And I would just cope by thinking about that. And I want to be, that's why I talk about this, because it is escaping. It was literally trying to survive. Leaving helped me survive because I don't know how much longer I could have lived in this environment. And so every year I'm out, I celebrate, you know, because I'm still here and I'm thrilled about that. But at the time it was like, I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to leave. I don't know how to exist outside of this family. It was terrifying. And the only way I could afford to leave was because I was allowed to teach piano lessons. So that's another thing that happens to stay-at-home daughters, is you don't have money. I know there are still stay-at-home daughters who exist today. I talk with them sometimes. They reach out to me. Finances is one of the biggest problems because you're not allowed to have a job or get an education. And then even if you do have money, a lot of times your parents have control of your bank account. So it's financial abuse. But thankfully, I was allowed to teach piano. And I could keep the money for myself. So I say that I was allowed to be specific, because it's very possible my dad could have changed his mind and taken the money. But that's what helped me afford to leave and buy a plane ticket and move away. All of that was happening at the same time that I was having this relationship with David that was not approved by my dad. And it was just like this emotional chaos. But just finally tapping into my intuition and knowing I need to leave this house. I need to get out of this place and I need to figure it out once I'm gone. So I was just like in survival mode and took a big leap, you know? And when I moved out, at first it was really freeing and exciting, but then all the PTSD stuff hit and I had to deal with mental health issues because I had been holding it in so tight for years. And then suddenly no one's telling me what to do and I got to figure out what's going on. So it was definitely a rocky, difficult journey, but I don't regret any of it mm-hmm. because I had to go through that. And looking back, it's like, I didn't know what was going to happen. And now I've been able to create a life away from all of that and turn it around. So I don't know. I feel very hopeful these days versus 11, 12 years ago.
Will you talk about your education journey? Let me tell you, as somebody that, as we know, there's no stability in this space of growing up. It just doesn't matter. If you were mainstream, there's no stability. If you were like deep cut cults, there's just like, it's all over the place. I went to public school and then homeschooled and then public school and then homeschool. There was a back and forth depending on the whims. I didn't have classical conversations. I had Bob Jones, top notch education. You're like, no. I wasn't homeschooled for that long. However, I definitely remember standing at some woman's counter looking at leaves and this was biology and her saying, look at the intricacy of those leaves. God made those. I want you to focus on that. That was biology. Meditate on his goodness. And if he created this, then and you view that as beautiful and lovely, how much greater do you think he sees you?
I'm so sorry.
I was homeschooled for such a short duration of time, long enough to put food on a therapist's table, but short enough to where I definitely benefited from public education. However, there's a caveat. You are taught to tune out anything that is not of the Bible from such a young age that I would do the assignments, but I would not absorb the information. When I was older, when I say older, I say 30, 31, 30. Like, I still firmly believed that Noah's Ark existed, dinosaurs and humans coexisted. And the only reason why dinosaurs went extinct is because they were too busy to be on, or they were too big to be on the Ark. There's a lot that I thought that women had genuinely believed that men had one less rib.
Yes, I love your vulnerability about this online because I think a lot of us believe these things and just like, oh, nobody taught me that that's incorrect.
Yeah.
I mean, this is really embarrassing.
No,
now.
It's not. I bet I thought the same thing.
I was taught that Martin Luther King Jr. was like a bad person.
Me too. That he was that domestic violence.
I was told he's like a communist or something. I don't know. It was just like, and then I went to college and I was like learning about all of these things were new to me. And they're like, he was a pastor. And I was like, wait, what? He's a pastor. And he's a civil rights activist. I was like, well, that seems like a worthy cause. but you come with it with like really fresh eyes when you're taught propaganda.
Totally. Two prereqs for my degree was like world history. And my world history professor, like we call her auntie. Like we still, she is... Oh. She's phenomenal. Her master's is in women's studies in ancient religion, women's contributions. It is so incredible. She challenged every fiber of who I was because I was deeply evangelical at that time and so resistant to anything that she had to say. I kept that in because I didn't want to offend her and push her away from Jesus, because my job was to show her Jesus. She's the one that handed me the book of the Gospel of Mary. She came up this way and we had her over and she was like, this book will change you. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to have demons in my house because
burn it.
Right. Like, this is so heretical. It was the most heretical thing I'd ever held in my hands before. Like, I might as well be holding a book on witchcraft, which, by the way, I was just like playing with tarot cards the other day at a store. So clearly I've evolved. But that's the level, right? Like, I felt like she brought Satan into my home. And anyway, I had that class, and then I had critical thinking and logic, and I've talked about it before. Thank you. I've talked about it before where I prayed ahead of that class, Lord, please do not let me develop a critical spirit and develop a bitter root, as I know all critical spirits are not of you. That's not what critical thinking means, but I genuinely believed that. I was 34.
Yeah. I want to go back and give her a hug.
Yeah.
It's going to be okay.
Right. I mean, I'm great now. Certainly see things through a lens of, you know, critical thinking. Yeah.
I used to be so angry at my younger self, like, that I just wasn't where I needed to be and didn't leave earlier and didn't figure the stuff out earlier. But now I feel a lot more compassion because I think we were just trying to do the best we could with the information we had. It's not like we had a lot of choices.
We really feel as a community, this is something that is not talked about enough. There's not a space for us. The women that escaped this world feel like we are 20 years behind schedule. And we've got, like, we were raising the children of the patriarchy. We were good enough to raise their children, but we are not good enough to work in their organizations. And we now have our degrees, but we don't have experience. So we can't get hired.
Mm-hmm.
I say this, and I typically hear from people that have been out of this for, they escaped when they were 24, and they're like, oh, no, I will help you. I will do it. And it's, thank you so much, sister. I'm 40. The people that I know that started their career right after college, they're now 40, and they're looking ahead towards retirement. And I'm like, I'm 40. I can't get a job because I don't have the experience. How I'm overqualified for so much because I learned how to be a manager. I learned how to do so many things because they were useful in the home. How do you express that, right?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like a book is a cover letter at this point. Like, hire me. You have no idea what I can do. But that's why so many of us have had to become innovators.
Yeah.
We've had to create this space for us. I totally took us off topic. What is your degree in?
English. So not always. A lot of people don't think that's a very helpful degree, but
you know, it is, because it gave you vocabulary.
Yeah. And it gave me room to write and express myself.
Yes.
And get feedback and learn not to take it personally and like build up this strength. And I was able to study publishing. So I do work in publishing now. So for me, I feel like it was helpful. But more than that, it was just like getting to be in a room with people who grew up not like me and learn from them. That was the biggest learning part.
Did your parents come to your graduation?
Oh, no.
Neither did mine. No. Actually, I couldn't attend it.
Yeah.
Because I have three kids and no one was there. So my husband and I graduated a year apart from each other.
Mm-hmm.
And we couldn't go because we couldn't just leave our kids, young kids, sitting in the auditorium by themselves. So
yeah,
didn't happen.
I'll tell you, I went to my community college graduation. My husband came, and that was nice. But community college, like, there's people from all over, like, all different ages, right? But when I went to university, I didn't go to graduation because I was, like, kind of embarrassed because I'm, like, much older than all the people who were graduating because they were usually 22 mm-hmm. and I was, like, 30. So I just didn't go. And then years later, my friend and I, she grew up the same way. We decided to buy graduation gowns and, like, do a photo shoot and just celebrate, like, how far we've gotten in life. And that was really fun. Our parents didn't come to any of that, but that's okay.
Yeah. What we have overcome should be celebrated every day.
Yeah.
Because there are moments every single day where we are reminded of where we came from and we are tempted to focus on how far we still have to go mm-hmm. to be where we think we need to be.
Right.
Kate, this is a beautiful, heartfelt book. My last question is always, what are you doing to end the cycle of trauma in your life, community's life, and the world? And this book, I said this before I pressed record, but this book is going to help so many people who may have repressed a lot of what they went through. They don't have language for it. I didn't know that I was raised in a cult until I heard a podcast host say, yeah. if you know that you cannot tell your loved ones some of the greatest parts of who you are, the parts that make up who you are, if you can't share that with them out of fear of being ostracized, disowned, discarded, or excommunicated, you're in a cult. And I kid you not, I was on a treadmill in a gym and time froze. Like, I straddled that treadmill and I just stood there. And this montage of my whole life was, like, going through. And I never understood my fascination with all of these cult documentaries because they felt familiar when I was watching them. And I'm like, why do I feel so antsy when I watch them? Like, why am I watching Keep Sweet and Obey and relating to some of these things?
Yeah.
My friend, you are changing the world through your words. I'm so proud of you. Reading your words, I felt like I knew you. You are a survivor. And thank you for having the audacity to write, to speak out. It takes audacity for a woman to follow her intuition. And I'm so proud of you.
That really means so much coming from you, because you get it and you know how hard it is. And I'm going to treasure those words. And I really hope, you know, the reason I didn't write a self-help book or some guide to leaving bad religion, it's because I think just telling our stories can be the most powerful tool. Mm-hmm. Then hopefully, my hope is that readers can see parts of themselves and realize that their stories matter in their very unique ways, and that they deserve agency and they deserve to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope that it's a liberating thing and not something that is restrictive or painful. I hope it's healing.
It doesn't feel it for me. I was not triggered. I didn't deal with CPTSD. Like, it really it provides language for people.
Yeah,
and that's what's so important, that we as women have had everything named for us by men. And it is time for us to, women, non-binary, it is time for us name things. There is a fantastic comedian by the name of Hannah Gatsby.
Oh, I love Hannah Gatsby.
Oh, she's so great. Part of the comedy bit is talking about how men have named all the things and how true that is.
Yeah.
And I am proud of who we all are for taking that power back.
Yes.
Three questions.
Okay.
What is your favorite song? Now, I have to say this, all these things with a caveat. These are like naming a favorite child. What is your favorite song, or what is currently the song that's like your anthem or something?
Okay.
On your playlist.
Right. Yes. Yeah, I have a playlist for my book, which is fun. I don't know if you were talking about that, but I made a playlist for my book. Oh, hey.
That's so funny. I've got one too. I have kind of two different ones. One on Apple and then one on Spotify. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It was really fun to put together. But the one song I keep playing lately is Growing Sideways by Noah Kahan. And he talks about therapy and healing and feeling like it's not working sometimes, and just like the struggle of life. And it, to me, that's really cathartic to just sit with that feeling and not have to resolve it all the time.
Mm-hmm. Book, aside from your own.
Ooh, favorite book. That's one of the, if listeners can't see it, but I have a lot of books behind me, so that's really difficult for me to pick favorite book. I'll just say a favorite book I read recently is called The Home Place by, I believe his name is J. Drew Lanham. And it's a nature nonfiction book about this Black man who grew up in South Carolina on a farm. And he does a beautiful job of talking about the environment he grew up in, his family, his ancestry, and then what does it mean for him today? And I mean, if you read my book, you'll know that I'm interested in nature writing. I talk about geology a lot. So I love when you can combine your personal story with the natural world. So I really enjoyed that one.
And your favorite movie? And that's the last question.
That one's also really hard.
It's Anne of Green Gables. It's fine.
I won't say Anne of Green Gables. I do love that movie, but I will recommend Don't Worry, Darling, since we're on the theme of Christian patriarchy. I think it came out 2022, perhaps. And I don't want to say too much about it, except that if you like the themes that we're talking about, but in a fictional film, it's kind of a suspense, twisty type of movie.
Okay.
I would say it's a feminist film. Mm-hmm. Let's just say that.
I'll have to check that out. And yeah. Then I'll have to check out. So I have a couple songs, or I have at least one song on my playlist by Noah Kahan. I will have to look at Going Sideways. Kate, you're incredible. Thank you for sharing this time. Thank you for carving out this space and this time to be here and to have a conversation. Thank you. Everybody, her book, go get it. Just put it on pre-order. I'm going to have the link in the show notes. Again, it's coming out April 30th. It's called Rift, a memoir of breaking away from Christian patriarchy. Thank you. It's beautiful. Yeah. Your words are powerful.
Thank you. It's been so nice to talk with you.
Thank you so much for listening. Please make sure that you are kind to yourself and to others. If you are interested in supporting this show, please click the link at the bottom to my Patreon. These shows take a lot of time and resources, and any support is appreciated. If you are interested in being a guest, please email the show at focusonyourownfamilypodcast@gmail.com. Inside of the show notes, you will find the links to mine and the guests' socials. Please give us a follow. We look forward to talking with you and connecting with you.